All right, good evening. I'm still Toby and I'm an alcoholic. Not too long ago, a young lady spoke here and she gave me a and she was fantastic, Marina, and she gave me a recommendation of someone who should speak also. I liked her style, I liked what she had to say. And she gave me the name of tonight's speaker. And therefore, without much delay, I introduce Jennifer S. from the emergency room?
Yes.
That's it. Come on up.
Yay. Thank you. Yay. Hey, my name's Jennifer. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jennifer.
And I am grateful to be here tonight. Thank you for inviting me to come and speak at your group. And thank you guys all for showing up. I know it's like raining and kind of icky outside, but you know, I was just telling Toby before the meeting, like sometimes I use that as an excuse not to go to a meeting, like, oh, it's kind of nasty outside, I don't really want to drive. And I know that when I was drinking and, you know, doing what I was doing, I was like, I'm from Cleveland, it didn't matter if there was 5 feet of snow and I had to drive 5 miles an hour or walk or whatever, I was, you know, going to get what I wanted to get. So It is fitting that we're here, and I'm actually grateful that this is kind of a small group because I feel a lot less nervous and more comfortable. So, but you know, I was just driving here, and I was talking to my higher power while I was driving, and I was just like, you know, thank you so much for recovery and a peaceful day and another way to live, because my life today is just absolutely amazing. You know, even though it kind of seems like, you know, I have a grown-up's life today. It's like, get up, go to work, you know, go home, watch TV, go to a meeting, call some people, kind of, you know, go to the store, do laundry, clean up the house, you know, like that kind of, I'm blessed to have that routine, because I remember when my life was nothing but insanity and misery. And it was like that for many years. You know, I just realized the other day I was thinking about some, like, horrible thing that had happened. And I was like, wow, you know, that was 16 years ago. And I have been sober for 5 of those 16 years. So I guess that would, you know, that would kind of bring me to the conclusion that I still know a lot more about drinking than I do about staying sober. So as much as I might like to think that I know, I am still a work in progress, and that's okay. I'm from Cleveland. I will be 35 this October, which I don't know how I feel about that, but anyway, there it is. And I grew up in, my dad is one of us. He lives in Pasco County, and he just celebrated 18 years in this fellowship, and I presented him with his medallion, but I'm kind of getting ahead of myself. Back then it was, you know, we were years away from that. And you know, he was a violent drunk, and I remember being little and, you know, him throwing glasses around the kitchen and passing out on the floor and, you know, coming up the driveway on his motorcycle in the middle of the afternoon and crashing right into the house and falling over and, you know, wondering what was wrong with him and, you know, like that kind of stuff was going on. And he took off when I was still pretty young. You know, he met another woman and ran off with her down here to Florida, which was actually probably a blessing, but, and I didn't really care, to tell you the truth, but, you know, my mom was pretty broken up about it for a lot of years, so, you know, she was in nursing school, and she was working, and I have an older brother, he's 8 years older than me, so he was kind of off doing his own thing. You know, I mean, he was a teenager when I was a child, and then, you know, by the time I was, like, 10, he was away at college and never came back home to live, so, I mean, it was pretty much just me and my mom for a lot of years, and, I have a wonderful, loving mother who's very responsible and very hardworking and extremely codependent, you know, and I feel guilty when I say, you know, negative things about my mom, but I'm just trying to be honest, you know, and so that's what it is. And she met another man when I was about 11 and just, like, you know, really latched on to that relationship and was kind of like consumed with that. I mean, she was there for me, but she was, you know, she was kind of, you know, wrapped up with that. And I grew up feeling kind of lonely, you know, like I was overweight and, you know, I got picked on a lot in school. You know, it was always, you know, fatty this and fatty that. So I was very self-conscious. I was very insecure. I kind of like looked to my peers to, you know, validate, you know, try to figure out who I was because I really didn't know who I was. And, you know, I was just very insecure. And a lot of people don't remember their first drink, but I remember mine. I was 13 and I had came down here to Tampa to visit my dad. And we took a road trip down to Fort Lauderdale to visit one of my friends who had moved down here. And we climbed out her bedroom window in the middle of the night and went out with these guys down in Fort Lauderdale that were like in their 20s. And I had never drank before. And, you know, we decided we were going to drink with these guys. And so I got one of those, like, the big bottles of MD 2020. And I took the cap off of it and I tipped it upside down and I drank it until it was empty. Like I remember that like it was yesterday. Like I did not take a breath. I did not sip it. I was just you know. And you know, so I was completely trashed and you know, I ended up, you know, hooking up with this guy who was like 21 and you know, then I started throwing up in the middle of the night and didn't stop until like the next afternoon. And afterwards, I just thought that this was like the best night of my life. You know, because I didn't, you know, I think at that point, like, I was already trying to escape. You know, I was already looking for a way to escape. And, you know, for that night, you know, I didn't see what I really looked like. I mean, I probably looked, you know, completely ridiculous. But to me, like, for at least for a little while, for a few hours, I wasn't this awkward, uncomfortable, insecure, didn't know what to say, didn't know where to stand, didn't know where to put my hands, didn't, you know, I wasn't, like, worried about any of that. I was just laughing, and I was drunk, and, you know, I was cute, or at least I thought I was, and, you know, and like, none of that mattered. You know, it didn't matter what other people were thinking about me and what I was thinking about me because I just really wasn't thinking. I was drunk, you know. So that was my first experience with alcohol. And it was a while, you know, another few years before I had an opportunity to really drink like that again. But when I got home from that trip, we moved to another city. To be closer to my mom's boyfriend, you know, where he just lived right up the street. And so I went to a new school going into high school, which was much smaller. My graduating class was like 125 people, and it was a very close-knit community. And I just felt like more like an outsider than ever. You know, it was really hard those first couple years just, you know, trying to fit in with people and trying to make friends. And I finally found, you know, I found a home with the stoners, you know, with the kids who were hanging out in the bathroom smoking cigarettes and smoking weed and taking acid on the weekends and doing, you know, that kind of thing. And so, you know, that's where I finally started to, like, meet and connect with people. And you know, as far back as I can remember, like, that was my identity. You know, and getting sober at the age of 29, I was like, I have no idea who I am. I have no idea. Because when I was 14, I mean, it was already, I mean, it became like a daily thing. I mean, by the time I was like 15, 16, I was, you know, I was smoking something every day or I was having a couple drinks or whatever I could get my hands on. So I don't think things really got out of hand like bad until, you know, I turned 18 and I got out of the house because my mom was pretty, you know, I mean, she knew I was, you know, kind of like a going in the wrong direction and she tried to have talks with me and stuff like that because I was getting in trouble in school, but it was just kind of like, okay, you know, but when I was 18, I moved out of the house and, you know, I started drinking a lot more. I started using like other drugs and, you know, pretty heavy and, you know, started like dealing with some consequences for that stuff. You know, I remember getting fired from a job that I, several jobs, you know, one when I was 18 and then, you know, one after that. I mean, one was for, you know, I was always calling out. I was coming in late. And then I started stealing from a job that I had. I would, like, I had the keys to this place, and I would break in there in the middle of the night and take money out of the safe. And then the next day, you know, I got rid of my ATM card because I thought if I don't have it, I won't, you know, take money out of my account. But then I would just take money from the store and then put it back. And so, I mean, I was just kind of doing some crazy stuff. And I went to my first meeting around that time in some church basement in the hood in Cleveland. And I remember going in there and, you know, everybody, I was the only white person in the room and everybody was so nice. They were so welcoming. They hugged me and I listened to them, you know, share their, you know, I listened to a woman share her story and she talked about, you know, being a prostitute and moving around the United States and doing all this stuff. And I was like, well, you know, I really don't belong here. I mean, it was nice, thank you, but I don't think I need this. I'm good now. I'm not doing that stuff that I was doing. I've left that alone, so I'm good. So you know, I think we all know where that went, you know. So I mean, it was just kind of like more of the same, you know. It was, I kept losing jobs and I finally just, you know, started working in bars and bartending and doing that kind of thing. And I got into some other drugs. I mean, I know this is AA. I'm trying to be respectful of the fellowship, but okay. So, I mean, and it really doesn't matter, but it's just kind of, you know, the path that I took. But, you know, I got into some different drugs when I was like 22, 23, and my life just completely spiraled out of control. I mean, and if you ask my family, they'll tell you I was out of control when I was 18. But I mean, to me, I at least, you know, had a roof over my head and was like taking showers and eating regularly. And, you know, when I turned 22, I pretty much spent all my time in like drug holes. You know, I was completely unemployable. I stole everything that wasn't nailed down. I couldn't even keep a job in a bar anymore. I started stealing from grocery stores, like little things, you know, like the people that I was hanging out with told me that you could, you know, taught me that you could steal like film and razor blades and baby formula and take it to like certain stores and sell it and they would give you money for it. And, you know, I wasn't a very good thief. I kept getting caught, you know, and I prostituted a lot. You know, I made money doing that. And I really didn't care, you know. I mean, I was just caught in this web of like addiction, you know. Like I would wake up in the morning and, you know, before I even got out of bed, the first thing I was doing was pouring a glass of vodka and washing pills down with it. And, you know, and then I would, you know, about an hour later, I would leave the house and I would stop at the bar and I would have a shot like 10 o'clock in the morning, you know. And I wonder now, like, what these people thought about, like, this 22, 23 year old girl sitting in a bar at 10 o'clock in the morning by myself, like having a shot, you know. And, I mean, it was just like, you know, all day. And I mean, that was my main focus, is like, you know, okay, my buzz is wearing off. What can I get? How can I get it? How can I get money? You know, who can I manipulate? Who can I borrow from? Who can I steal from? You know, and it was just this kind of like existence. And really, I mean, I had like moments of clarity, you know. Like I remember driving down the highway one time and just like, you know, crying my eyes out because I didn't feel good about what I was doing. I didn't like the way I was living, but, there was absolutely no way that I was going to stop. You know, I didn't see, you know, for the brief periods that I was sober, I was absolutely miserable. And I was like coming out of my skin. You know, it's like I was miserable when I was drinking and using, and I was miserable when I was sober. And I really felt like I was just kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. And eventually someday I would do something, but not right now, not today, maybe tomorrow, maybe next week. So, I started facing some more consequences. I was arrested several times. I spent some time in jail, and, I ended up calling up my, you know, my dad came up there. He had about 10 years, not 9 or 10 years sober at the time. And he came to visit me in one of the institutions that I was in. And he brought the big book with him in the visiting room and sat down and opened it up and started reading out of it to me. And I was just like, has this man like lost his mind? Like, really? He hasn't seen me in how many years? And he comes up here with this book. And, but when I got out, you know, I mean, I was out like 2 months and I was 10 times worse than before I had went in, and I was in trouble again, and things were really bad. And I couldn't think of anything except like getting away. And I thought that, you know, maybe if I came down here to Florida and was in the warm weather with the palm trees and, you know, around some different people, maybe that would fix me. So I asked my dad if I could come and stay down here with him. And he said yes. So I came down here. I got on a bus and came down here in March of 2005. And he picked me up at the bus station and then took me to detox. And I spent about a week there. And then I went back to his house and stayed with him. And I went to some meetings. And I think I put together about, you know, like maybe 30 days. I got a sponsor. But I just really wasn't. I just really still, I mean, the only thing that I can really, like, say, you know, and it's like I try to, you know, now, like, when I have someone in my life, and I have, you know, a few people in my life that call me regularly that just aren't done, and it's like I just don't even really know what to say anymore. I mean, I think it's just a point that we have to reach with God, you know, and that's just where I was at. I mean, I had already had my ass kicked, I mean, 10 times. Like, I had been through some things that nobody should ever go through, but I just was, like, not done. You know, I hadn't had enough yet, you know? So I spent another 3 years down here, you know, going through, crazy, painful stuff. You know, my dad, because he has a very low tolerance for bullshit, being one of us, and thank God for that, you know, because, I mean, my mother just, like, loved me to death, you know. She was going to Al-Anon a little bit, and they toughened her up a little bit, but she just couldn't stand to see me in the street and hungry, and my dad was like, get your ass out of my house, I'm not giving you any money, and as a matter of fact, don't call me, I don't want to talk to you, you know, and I hated him. I hated him. I was just like, you know, what an asshole. How could he? You owe me. You were a drunk when I was a kid. Like, and, you know, and he didn't budge, you know, and I'm really grateful to him for that, because I feel like if people would have continued to bail me out of my bullshit and, you know, take care of me, that I might still be out there. You know, so, I mean, I spent a couple years, like, I mean, homeless with nowhere to go. I was in and out of halfway houses, and I couldn't stop using. I mean, I remember being in a house one night, and it was a really cold night. It was, like, in January, and it was, like, 40 degrees outside, and I was just laying in my bed, like, praying that the house manager did not come in the room and drug test me, because I knew that they would put me out on the street, and I didn't have a dime to my name, and I had nowhere to go. And I just continued to, you know, use anyway, because, I mean, I just, and I was just like, what is wrong with me? Like, I just felt completely powerless. I felt like I had no way out. You know, I mean, I would try, you know, for like a week or so, I would go to meetings and I would talk to people. And then, you know, there would come that obsession, you know, that, you know, would just start, you know, and then my mind would just keep going and going and going and going until finally I would just give in. I would just be like, you know what, I'm just gonna, just this once, nobody's gonna know. And, you know, of course, just, you know, one is too many and 1,000 is never enough. So, 2007, I had moved out of a halfway house. I hooked up with a guy who was in the program, and I thought, you know, maybe that would fix me. But, you know, I wasn't sober at the time, you know, and I was pretending that I was, you know, but I was secretly, you know, sneaking around and doing my thing, and I think he knew it. And, after living with him in his house, like 6 or 7 months in South Tampa, it finally, like, came out, you know, and he was like, I know what you're doing, I'm not an idiot, and I can't live this way anymore, you're on your own, I'm out of here, you know. So, I came home from work, and he was gone, and, so I was just, you know, trying to, like, manipulate him into coming back. I really had no interest in getting sober, but, you know, I was on the phone, you know, because, I mean, once he was gone, like, I was truly alone with me, and, like, I felt that, you know, there was no, like, hiding and sneaking around and having these, like, you know, few hours where I felt like I was portraying this normalcy, watching TV and cooking dinner. Like, it was just me and my disease. You know, and I was going during the day and like waiting tables and just coming home at night and sitting there and just getting like wasted all by myself every single night, all night long. I was usually up the whole night, just, you know, tiptoeing around the house and peeking out windows and locking myself in the bathroom and, you know, seeing spiders and stuff that weren't there. I mean, it was just, it was like insane. And I just felt like really alone and really desperate and really, you know, it was like I had this like clarity, you know, like I was in denial for so many years about like how bad it really was and, you know, what was really going on. And it was like suddenly like somebody was holding a mirror up and I could see like with, you know, like real eyes that, like, this is my life. I am 29 years old. I am completely alone. Nobody wants to be around me. My family is like fed up to here with me and just devastated at like how, you know, my life is turning out. I have no friends. I'm miserable. You know, so, I started praying you know, late at night, you know, all wasted, all by myself, you know, like, I just started talking to, you know, God. I'd never really had too much of a relationship with any kind of God. You know, when I was younger, my family took me to church and stuff like that. But I mean, I hadn't talked to a God in many years except, you know, please God, get me out of this one. You know, it was kind of like, and there's been so many, like, coincidences that aren't coincidences in my life. Like, right before this guy left the house, he, like, threw this cell phone at me. And he was like, here, it's paid for a month. And, like, I mean, this is a guy who, like, never even bought me anything for my birthday. And, like, 2 years of dating him, he throws this, right when he's leaving me, he throws me this cell phone and goes, here, it's paid for a month. And that was the only reason that I had a phone. And I called a woman that I had met in these rooms and talked to her. And you know, she was sober. And I told her the truth, like, about what was really going on. You know, I didn't sugarcoat anything. She said, how are you? And I said, like, I'm a freaking mess. And I'm scared and I'm lonely and I'm miserable and I don't want to live like this anymore. And I called her every day for a couple days, and I kept praying every day, like, for willingness, you know, because I had been in these meetings, and, you know, and that's why when I see people in these meetings, and I know that they're, you know, they're drinking, or they're using, or whatever they're doing, like, I never make any, I try to never make anybody feel rejected, or like they're not welcome, or like I'm judging them, because they, you know, they haven't stopped what they're doing, because I remember that, you know, that was me. Like, I sat for years in these rooms and listened and kept doing what I was doing. And, like, had I not sat in these rooms, I wouldn't have known to pray for willingness. I wouldn't have had that phone number. I hadn't been to a meeting in 9 months when I hit my bottom, you know, but I had a phone number, you know, and I had, you know, some stuff that I had heard that I had carried with me. And, you know, it was like every day I prayed for willingness. And, like, within a week, I was doing some things that I had never done before. Like, I called a detox and I put my name on the waiting list to get in. I called a halfway house that I had been in, and I talked to the woman who ran it, who, by the way, I mean, I left there in the middle of the night with no explanation, with like a $300 bill, you know, and my friend, like, convinced me that it was the right thing to do to call her. And, like, I'll never forget the love that she showed me. You know, I was like, as soon as I got her on the phone, I was like, I know I owe you money and blah, 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 blah. And she was like, you know what? Don't worry about that right now. Just go to detox. And when you get there, call me. And, you know, I talked to my boss. I told him that, you know, I needed a couple weeks off because I was, you know, going through some stuff and I needed to be in a medical facility. And, you know, after deciding not to make up this big story about going to a funeral and stuff like that, it was like I was learning how to be honest, you know, with the help of other people. Like, my mom was like, why don't you try telling the truth? You know, I was like, well, okay, you know, let's give that a shot. And, so, you know, I went to the detox, and then I went to the halfway house, and I was there, you know, the first month that I was there. I went to meetings every day, and it really, like, I mean, I just kind of felt like something was different, you know, like I had this desire, like I had this little spark of hope that I had never really had before, that, like, this time I'm not doing this because I have to do this, like, I want to do this, like, I really have hope that maybe this life without, you know, any alcohol or drugs can be better than what I've been doing. And I just kept, you know, I kept praying every day. I kept talking to people. And as soon as possible, I asked someone to be my sponsor. And she was only my sponsor for the first 7 months. And then I got another sponsor, and she's still my sponsor today. You know, we didn't work any steps together. She was very busy. But I think that, you know, God put her in my life for the time that she was supposed to be there, because she was very old school and very raw. And she told me something when I was brand new that really, like, changed all my ideas about, you know, the feeling that I had to drink. And she said to me, you know, no matter what you think, no matter what goes through your head, don't drink. No matter how you feel, don't drink. And that was like a revelation to me, because I always thought that, like, if I wanted to bad enough, that I had to. Like, I didn't know that I didn't have to give into that obsession. You know, I didn't know that I could, like, and I didn't know that the more I prayed, the more I came to meetings, the more literature I read, the more I talked to people, the more I got involved in service, that the more I was not going to feel that way. You know, and so I really just, like, made it my personal mission to do whatever I could to keep that obsession as far away as possible. And I can honestly say since that that first week in detox, like, I have not felt that overpowering obsession that there is nothing else for me to do except go drink. Like, that, I have never felt that way again. And I'm really grateful for that. And I know that it's a spiritual condition, you know, that allows me to have a day of freedom from that obsession. Like, that obsession will return if I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. If I'm not going to meetings, if I'm not talking to people, if I'm not, you know, living steps in my life, I can bring that obsession back with behaviors, and I can bring it back by going places that I don't belong, around people that I don't belong with. When I first started driving again, I got my license back when I had about 6 months sober, and I decided to take a ride by this guy's house that I used to, you know, spend a lot of time with when I was drinking. And as soon as I turned down his street, my stomach did this, like, nosedive. And I was like, yeah, I don't belong over here. This is not a good place for me. And, you know, I turned around and drove away, and I never went back. And, you know, I don't, like, frequent places that I used to hang out when I was drinking, because I just don't, like, I don't want to feel that way, you know. I didn't go to Chili's for my first 18 months of sobriety because I loved their margaritas when I was drinking. I loved their 2-for-1 margaritas, and I felt like I could go to Chili's and have dinner and not, like, lose control and have a drink, but I didn't want to be sitting in Chili's wishing I was drinking. I would rather go somewhere else. I mean, how simple is that? You know, I can go to another restaurant and I probably will not think about a margarita. So I'm just going to do that. And, like, today I can go to Chili's and I don't think about having margarita most of the time. But, you know, I mean, I just tried to keep it really simple. You know, another thing that I heard in the meetings was, you know, about talking clean and living dirty, you know, about changing our behaviors outside of the rooms. And I mean, like I said, up until this point, I had stolen everything that wasn't nailed down. I figured if I didn't get caught, I didn't really do it. You know, if nobody knew about it, like, I was, you know, my secret was safe. But, you know, what I realized was that, like, it didn't really matter who knew if I knew, you know, because every time I lied, I stole, I did something that wasn't in line with my higher power's will for me, I was degrading myself in my own eyes. And even though I wasn't really dealing with it, it was dealing with me. You know, it was making it that much easier for me to go and pick up whatever it is that I wanted, for me to treat myself badly. And so I walked into this little, you know, with like 30 days sober, I walked into this little flea market, and, you know, I mean, and I had money in my pocket, I was working and everything, and I picked up a pair of sunglasses, and I looked around, nobody was looking, and I was just getting ready to stick them in my pocket, and I heard somebody's voice from the meeting, you know, about, you know, living right outside the rooms. And I took them up to the counter, and I paid for them, and I haven't drank. You know, I mean, that was the first time. I mean, I had made it to, you know, 30, 40 days a couple times. And that was the first time that, you know, I didn't steal anything. And I really don't think that that's a coincidence, you know. Like, I mean, there were some things that I tried and some things that I did different. But, I mean, I don't think that anything was a coincidence. I got a home group for the first time. I had never done that before. I joined up with the home group. It was very small, kind of like this. You know, I felt very comfortable there because I had a lot of fear and anxiety of social situations and other people. I mean, I was scared of my own shadow, like, my first 2 years. I had so much anxiety. I had to actually seek some outside help for that because I felt like I was going to come out of my skin. There was days I didn't want to leave the house. Like, I kind of really struggled with that. But, you know, I got through it, and my sponsor loved me through it. You know, she told me to sit on the couch every morning and look at a candle and watch the flame and breathe all the way in and breathe all the way out. And I was like, are you kidding me? I mean, it was like the first time I walked into a meeting and I'm telling these people what a hopeless junkie I am, and they told me to pray about it. And I'm like, is anybody listening to me? Like, I have a serious problem. But, like how amazing is it that when we actually stop thinking that we know everything and take suggestions, it works? You know, like, calling people works. When they told me that I should call people if I wanted to drink, I was like, for what? You know, but I mean, that really works too. So, I mean, yeah, it's really been an amazing journey. I went through the 12 steps with my sponsor, and now I have sponsees, and I go through the 12 steps with them. and I continually work steps. I know, you know, certain people do it differently. In my sponsor tree, we keep doing the steps over and over again. And that's been, you know, sometimes I'm like, you know, God, this is a pain in the ass. Like, I've already done this. I got to go to my sponsor's house tonight and sit and write about this stuff and talk about this stuff. But it really keeps me, like very aware of like, where I'm at in my life and my behaviors and what I'm doing and what's going on. And so, I mean, I'm grateful that that we do it like that. And I know, even though, you know, my sponsees kind of put me off sometimes, I know they're grateful too. So it's really been a gift. I mean, so much has changed. I have an amazing relationship with my dad today. You know, I called him when I was in that really dark place, and I said, it was like the day before Thanksgiving, and I said, can you take me to detox? And he goes, yeah. And he came over the next day and picked me up to take me to detox. And he has been like, it was like he knew. It was like he knew that something was different. He has been like 100% behind me, supporting me ever since that day. You know, we have developed a very close relationship that, I mean, I can only thank God for, because if it wasn't for both of our diseases, we might have never had a relationship, you know, and we have a very special bond. And I was actually, you know, able to support him through his divorce this last year. You know, and he really went through a really tough time and was in a lot of pain and really struggling. And, you know, I was able to be kind of like the grown up and like the cooler head. And so, I mean, I've made a lot of really good friends here. I've reconnected with my family. I just came back from Cleveland Monday. I spent the weekend up there. I'm getting married in November, so I went up there, and my mom threw me like a little party. And you know, I was at this party, and it was like 20 women there who have known me my whole life, you know, family, friends, and like their kids. And it was just like, what a gift, you know, to be around like all this family, and everybody's like so happy to see me. And, you know, I mean, of course, you know, little things are coming up, you know, people are like, oh, I'll just never forget seeing you that day that we went and picked you up from that neighborhood. And, you know, those marks all over you and your feet were all black and, you know, and stuff like that. And, you know, and then I said something to my mom. I was joking with her, like, remember how stressed out you were at my brother's wedding? And she's like, that's because of you. Do you remember how much you were drinking? And I'm like, okay. So I know that my family is still a little bit resentful, and that's okay. You know, I have a brother who doesn't return my phone calls even now. And, you know, I get to feeling like a little bit, bad about that and a little bit angry about that. But, there was a lot of years that I wasn't there for him, you know, that I wasn't available to have a relationship with him. And I can't just expect that just because, you know, I'm doing the right thing now that, you know, all is forgiven and that he should go out of his way to pick up the phone and call me or call me back or whatever. So I'm just trying to accept what is and be grateful for the relationships that I do have. I'm extremely grateful to, you know, my most beautiful relationship is with my higher power. Like I sit every morning, and every morning, like if I wake up late, it doesn't matter, because if I don't have that time with God in the morning, I'm just not like right throughout the day. I mean, even if it's like 5 or 10 minutes, just I'm not very good at meditating. I keep saying I'm gonna, you know, take a class or, you know, do a tape or something, and I just don't have like very much patience. But you know, I do read, you know, like the daily meditation and some spiritual literature in the morning, and I sit and I'm quiet and I pray and I say the Serenity Prayer every morning. And, you know, I ask my higher power to guide me in my recovery and show me how to live. And, you know, I mean, that's pretty much it. I've been in school since 2010, very, you know, part-time. And I just got my foot in the door as a legal assistant. So, I mean, that's, you know, I'm kind of just, you know, learning how to grow up. You know, I read a meditation not long ago that talked about, you know, we take away from what recovery does when we sit in meetings talking about how sick we are and how much we screw up. And like, don't get me wrong, like some days my patience and tolerance is like nil. I mean, I just flipped out it, because I still work 2 days a week at my little restaurant job, and I just freaked out there a couple weeks ago and like went off screaming at somebody that I was working with. And I have done that regularly since I got sober. And it's gotten a little bit, you know, fewer and far between. I feel like I've gotten a little bit better with it, but I am not in no way like a saint. You know, I lose my temper. I say hurtful things to people. I catch myself judging people. I catch myself saying a lot of things that I shouldn't be saying. And that's actually been my prayer every day this week is, you know, God, please help me learn to talk less and listen more. You know, please help me to think about what I'm saying before I say it. Because I noticed that, like, when I walk around just kind of coming out of my mouth with, like, the first thing that comes to my mind and, like, negative stuff comes out and judgmental stuff comes out, like, I feel bad. You know, my sense of peace and, like, my self-esteem is just, I'm not, like, okay, you know, but, and it takes discipline, you know, but if I can kind of just, like, watch what I'm saying and, like, you know, ask myself before I speak, like, is it kind? Is it necessary? Is it true? And, like, half the stuff I was going to say, I don't end up saying, which is, like, really hard for me because, like, I really want to say this, but, like, I know that I don't need to say it, you know, and at the end of the day, I don't have anything to make amends for, and I feel good about the way that I behaved and the way that I treated other people, you know, so I'm just, I am extremely grateful for this life, you know, and I just keep, sometimes I feel like I'm not really putting as much into recovery as I need to, as much as I should be. I'm down to probably making like 2 meetings a week where I used to make like 4 religiously, but you know, I just, I've had to kind of find a balance, you know, between working 2 jobs and getting enough rest and taking care of myself and, you know, keeping in touch with my sponsees and my sponsor. And, you know, I still have a service commitment. It's not the same service commitment that I had the first few years. I used to chair a meeting every week. Now I am the group treasurer, which my fiance told me, last week that I was, not taking it seriously because I wasn't keeping like meticulous records of the money, and I got really defensive about that, and you know, bit back and said something kind of nasty. But you know, then I had to kind of take a look at it and go, you know what, you're right. You know, I don't like it when somebody calls me on my shit. It hurts. You know, it's humbling. You know, but I think that humility is like the ideal state. You know, and I think it even says this somewhere that humility is the ideal state for us to be in, because I find that like. And that kind of helps, you know, because I don't really have to, like, worry so much about, like, my pride being wounded. I have a lot of pride and ego, you know, or, like, being embarrassed about something. It's like, you know what, this is a good opportunity for me to practice humility because, you know, my ego and pride is I think, like, the most damaging of all my defects, except for maybe self-pity. That one's pretty bad, too. But, you know, I recognize that I'm a human being too, you know, and I just try to do, you know, the next right thing every day and help someone else and you know, thank God for another day and don't drink no matter what. So I would like to thank you all for letting me share. I've been talking and babbling and just going on, and I think that's about it. Thank you.
Jessica. Jennifer. See? It's anonymous.